The Boston Celtics win, and they couldn't have done it without Enes Kanter and Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, and Gordon Hayward. I'm going to talk about it here. It's the Wednesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go. Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Happy New Year to those of you who accepted that time is a social construct. Otherwise, the rest of you can just march on the rest of whatever it is you believe. I don't know. It's 2020, and the Boston Celtics head into the 2020 portion of their schedule. 5 games behind the Milwaukee Bucks in second place in the East, percentage points ahead of the Miami Heat. The Boston Celtics at 23-8 have won 74% of their games. Miami Heat at 24-9, they've played 2 more games, have won 73% of their games, and thus the percentage points. I'm John Corrales, MassLive.com. I cover the Boston Celtics on a regular basis. I'm there with them at home on the road, although not this particular road game, in practices. So if you are a new listener, you're going to get some inside access here that you're really not going to find on a lot of other podcasts. I also combine some playing experience in my podcasts and analysis. So really is a unique podcast. So I hope all of you new listeners in this new year have made the resolution to add the Locked On Celtics podcast to your rotation. All right, Boston Celtics win this thing. 109-92 in Charlotte. Jason Tatum led the way with 24 points. Although Gordon Hayward was the better player in this game. But Tatum, 24 points, 10 of 18 field goals, 4 of 7 from 3, 7 rebounds. Nice game from him, mostly at the beginning and kind of like the end. In the middle, he had some kind of struggles. I'll talk about that in a second. Hayward, 21 points, 9 of 14 field goals, 3 of 6 from 3, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. He's down for 0 steals, but I could have sworn I've seen him steal the ball in this game and go the other way with it. But he was good, complete control of this game every time basically that he had the ball. Obviously a couple of turnovers, but he was, I think, the best player in this game. Kemba Walker's 22 points, 9 of 19 field goals, 3 of 7 from 3, 7 assists, 3 steals. Kemba doing everything he needed to do to win this game. Back to Tatum. I thought he had a 5-for-5 first quarter where I thought he had a lot of things cooking. He had a very nice drive in the third quarter, which I think showed how smooth and his potential, like what that could be, where he drove right and then came over to the, finished on the left-hand side. If you've seen the highlights, it's been tweeted out a million times. It's a really just gorgeous play. However, I think that highlights some of the things that he did wrong in the second and third quarters, mostly, where he turned the ball over a lot. He's a little loose with the ball. And I think part of that was part of the Celtics' overall problem, where they built a big lead. And it was like, all right, we're going to calm down. And if you watch the game, you heard Scal say, you know, let go of the rope. You just didn't play with the same crispness, the same intensity. You just kind of let it go for a little bit. And Charlotte would kind of climb back into it. So I think Tatum kind of got wrapped up in that too. I'd like to have that habit be broken, but that's a hard habit to break. I think everybody kind of has that habit from time to time, especially during the marathon of a long season. I think just guys are just like, all right, I get to loosen my shoulders a little bit, just kind of relax. Like, all right, we got them. And then they make a run, you're like, ah, shit, we gotta start trying again. And you try, and you go back up 15, like, all right, got him. And, you know, that back and forth happened throughout the game. And I think Tatum got caught up in that because he had a lot of got loose with the ball, turned the ball over, trying to dribble, and really just not looking great with it. There was a second quarter possession where he just basically dribbled out the shot clock and then passed it off, I think, to maybe Semi Ojeleye for a last second shot. Or no, I think it was Javonte Green. Javonte Green took the shot. And if I was Javonte, I'd be pissed. Like, why are you giving me this shot? He's had the ball dribbling for like 16 seconds trying to get by people. He just couldn't get by somebody. And then in the last like 2 seconds on the shot clock, he passes. You're like, great. Now I have to force some bullshit up. And you know, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, that's why are you putting a miss on me? You dribbled at the clock. You shoot the ball. But I think Tatum gets a little too caught up in that. Maybe a little too caught up in the ISO. And if he had just seen that, he was not going to get past that guy in that initial burst. Just give it up, cut, move, set a pick, get a pick set for you, then get the ball back, and then score that way. Like he really has to get better at that. He is still testing his powers. I think I can see throughout the course of the season has his different approaches. At first, it was just attacking regardless of what was going on at the rim. Then he tried to work in more of the mid-range rather than the floaters. He went through a stretch where he was taking a bunch of floaters because he wasn't getting all the way to the rim. It wasn't working. And then after the floaters, he worked on the mid-range, and now he's doing a lot of step-backs. And I think he's just trying to figure out what his actual repertoire is. And this being his third year in the league, there's going to be some experimentation with that. And we saw that in this game. But in the end, he did end up with some pretty decent efficiency. 10 of 18 shooting, 55.5%. 4 of 7 from 3, 57%. You can't argue. You really can't argue that. The 3 turnovers aren't great, but like everything else, 7 rebounds and assists, three steals for Tatum. Everything else, team high plus 15. Everything else, it looks good. But criticize Tatum a little bit because he could just be so much better. And he's, you know, I will say that there are people who are like, why do you not criticize certain guys and why do you criticize others? And why, you know, especially Tatum and Brown. It's always because I think they could do more. And if they were at, if this is what I thought, like forever, this is what he's going to be, then the criticism is just, you don't criticize as much. But when you know that these guys can be even better and that there's a level way up top somewhere, they can get to a level that you just, it's not, they're not there yet. And maybe they're not even close to scratching that top level, that ceiling. You say, all right, well, this was a good game, but you could do better. And so I look at Jason Tatum's game and 24.7 rebounds and assists, 3 steals, and a block shot, by the way, on 56% shooting, basically. That's an awesome game, but you look closer and you say, all right, here are all of the things that you can fix. Because if you fix those things and you play awesome throughout, then this is a 35-point game. And you really start to see like the potential there. So, but really pull back a little bit. Tatum had a great game. Hayward had a great game. There's really not much that I'm going to criticize there for Hayward. I love the way he attacked. I love the way he put his head down and was really getting in there and getting in the mix, getting contact. He drove one early. It was the pass to Enes Kanter, where he just put his head down, created the contact one way, took the contact from the left, jumped, did not care. I actually held my breath. I know a lot of people like joke when Hayward goes up for an alley-oop, they go, oh my God, I held my breath. Like, I don't really worry about that so much. But in that situation, when he was jumping and there's like 4 people around, that was like one of those like, oh my God, there's a lot of feet you can land on there. But he went, he took all of that contact, drove aggressively, somehow snuck a pass around, a wraparound to Enes Kanter, and got the assist there. I mean, really was just beautiful to see. Hayward, this is probably the Hayward at his best. 21, 10, 6 assists, just 2 turnovers. Just overall, if there's any criticism, I'd say that, you know, he should probably, you know, get to the line a little bit more, but that's minor. That's a minor criticism in this particular game because I thought he was in total control of this game. Kemba Walker was just kind of good throughout. Like this is just a nice, simple Kemba game. This is, you just take a couple of shots here and there, and eventually you work your way up to a 20-point night. First quarter, 5-point first quarter. Second quarter, 5-point second quarter. After the half, 7-point third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, another 5. And that all adds up to a 22-point night. Just slow, steady, take a shot here, hit a 3 there, get to the free throw line once. You know, just add little bits at a time, little bits at a time. And next thing you know, you got a 22.7 assist night. And was he doing anything like overly spectacular? I mean, he had some nice plays, but like he wasn't in takeover mode or anything like that. He just had himself a nice, calm, efficient night. 22, 7 assists, 4 rebounds on 47% shooting. That's beautiful from Kemba. And you let Tatum cook, you let Hayward do his thing, and other guys kind of fill in some of the gaps. I'll talk about Cantor after the break. But this is just a nice, simple, breezy Kemba Walker game. Nothing crazy. He did force a couple of shots, but like whatever. And I just like that. I like the fact that Kemba can just kind of cruise his way to a 22-point night. It's kind of nice. And he'll take over when he needs to. But he did close the game out in the last few minutes. I mean, he did come in and had a quick 5.2 assist burst to like turn a 10-point lead to 20 real fast. But that's it. Nice night from Kemba. Enes Kanter really was the guy who helped break things open. And I'll talk about Enes Kanter's impact after the break. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics podcast coming up next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Enes Kanter, we talk about him a lot. We've talked about his defense. We know that there are games like that Toronto game. We've said it a couple times already. Kanter is not that bad. And yes, there are times where he looks that bad defensively. And against elite pick and roll teams, he might be unplayable. And now he's playing because Grant Williams can only do so much. And especially against a team with some size like Charlotte has. Robert Williams is hurt. Vincent Poirier is hurt. I mean, he probably, if it was just Rob that was hurt, I think Poirier would have gotten some time. But Kanter is, you know, he's going to have his bad matchups. He's going to have games where he sits and should sit. But he's showing that he can make a big impact. Now, 6 block shots, which, by the way, shout out to Poirier for the line of the night, who said, Enes Kanter, he tweeted this out, Enes Kanter with 6 blocks tonight and didn't jump one time, which is really funny because I don't think he really did jump once to block one of those shots. But just get your hands up, swipe. Those guys are going up to shoot, and he's at least good at swiping down and getting a hand on that exposed ball. I mean, a lot of those, they kind of look like steals, but they end up being blocks because the guy is going up. You can see he's gathering to shoot. So they technically end up as block shots. So a career high 6 block shots. And he became the first Celtics reserve ever to have 13 points, 14 rebounds, and 6 block shots in a single game. He's the first Celtics player to record that line since Dino Raja did it in 1996. Dino Raja was a starter when he did that. So Raja had a similar line, but so it's not since 1996 has a Celtic had 13 plus points, 14 plus rebounds, and 6 plus block shots. So a real nice night there for Kanter. And mostly, Cantor's impact was the second chance points. He had two offensive rebounds, which doesn't sound right. But those two, if it was the only two, they came in the fourth quarter. And part of the run that helped the Celtics kind of turn a tight, uncomfortably tight game into a blowout. And the Celtics ended up with 14 second chance points. And Cantor obviously had a hand in that. His rebounding, 14 rebounds, that's huge. The Celtics haven't had a rebounder like that in a long time. And he's out there, you know, putting in that level of work. The 13 points is really nice. It's a nice bonus. The thing about Cantor, aside from the rebounding, his hands are really good. Like, he's got really good hands. And that's part of why he gets a lot of offensive rebounds. But that pass from Hayward was not an easy one to catch. That ball kind of came out of nowhere. And then Kemba threw a fastball from the free throw line down to Cantor underneath the basket. And that thing had zip on it. And Cantor just kind of sucked that thing in and finished the play. So very nice performance out of Cantor, and that those good hands are part of, you know, how he's going to help this team. Again, there are matchups where he's going to be bad. There are matchups where he's going to look like the worst player in the NBA, and he will be unplayable in those games. And I don't know if that's going to come in a playoff series. Like, if the Celtics meet the Raptors in a playoff series, it's going to be difficult to have Cantor on the floor and watch Lowry and Van Vliet just destroy him on pick and rolls. And they didn't have Marc Gasol in these last two games where they played. So that would be tough. And part of why people talk about the Celtics bigs and why the Celtics need help is because of situations like that. If you have Cantor and you get into a playoff series against the Raptors and you just can't play a guy who can otherwise give you a 14 rebound night and who can otherwise give you some overflow offense and maybe get to double figures like the 13 points he scored in the Charlotte game. If you can't play him, then what good is he? And I'm not going to, like, there's no defense against that. I mean, he's really, there are going to be days where he's bad and maybe series where he's bad. And that's just how it is. Are the Celtics going to make a move? Are they going to try to fix that somehow? I just don't think that they can. They're just going to have to hope that Tice can fill in those gaps and that maybe when Rob Williams is healthy and maybe Poirier can figure out whatever he needs to figure out offensively, defensively, and maybe Grant Williams can grow into a more consistent contributor in that way. They're just going to have to hope for all that. But Cantor, at least in this game, was pretty good and pretty important. So I'll take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about Marcus Smart after the break and his night, which is interesting. And some of the stuff that he talked about, his quarantine when he was out with his eye infection. Do that next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Marcus Smart had an interesting game against the Charlotte Hornets. If you look at his offensive numbers, 7 points on 3 of 12 shooting, 1 for 7 from 3. Not great, Bob. But the rest of his numbers, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, a turnover, a plus 9. Not bad. I don't think Marcus Smart is 100%. I don't think that he's fully back from the eye infection. Having seen him up close in that first game back against the Raptors, You can see now, being in the scrum, there are a bunch of lights on you anyway, and there might be a tendency to squint, but like he was very obviously sensitive to light in that scrum. He said it didn't bother him on the court, but his eyes are still, I don't think he's 100%. So does that mean that he should be shooting 12 times? No, if you can't see the rim, I don't know how bad it is, but I don't think that he should be taking 7 threes necessarily in the game. However, most of them seemed okay. I mean, he forced a couple for sure. He definitely forced a couple, took a couple early in the shot clock. So I shouldn't say that they were all great. But he's going to play his game. And earlier in the year, those shots were falling. And I think he's just going to probably go out there and just do what he does and be a threat. And hopefully those shots start to fall. He did talk to Mark Murphy of the Boston Globe to get a little bit into what that week off or multiple weeks off with the eye infection was like. And he said, quote, "I was quarantined to one room of my house, my game room. I couldn't leave, couldn't touch anything in the house, washing everything, bleaching. My room was sterilized. It was lonely. Not saying it was like being in solitary, but I can see for that amount of time that it would drive somebody crazy who was in it for years and years." Being quarantined, I'm sure being quarantined in his game room, he had stuff to do, but he couldn't see anything. And it's tough to be in a room the whole time, just like, all right, what do I do? Girlfriend can't come in. You know, friends can't come in, only a doctor, probably in like some sort of like hazmat getup or whatever, can come in. Like that's difficult. For him to go through that level of hell with the eye infections was tough. But now he's back, and I do think that the eyes are bugging him, I think, to some degree. So his shot doesn't look particularly great, but he did a lot of other things. I forget who it was that he tried to block, that he damn near took his head off. Like following through on the block shot attempt kind of like ended up with the dude in a chokehold, it seemed like. But so he's doing other things, and he's trying to do Marcus Smart things, but I still think it's going to take Marcus Smart a little bit of time to get going. And maybe coming back when he did was trying to get back into the flow of things. But as long as those eyes keep improving, I mean, when we talked to him against the Raptors after the Raptors game, he said he's still taking drops. So obviously that there's still issues. If you're still putting the drops in your eyes, it means that there's something still there that they're trying to make sure it doesn't come back. So hopefully he feels better. A couple of other things from this game that just stood out to me. Shout out to Grant Williams for hitting the top of the backboard on a three-point attempt. I mean, that's hard to do. I haven't seen that one before, but shout out to you. That's tough. That's a good one. That's a new one. And very interesting Celtics defense on Devontae Graham, where they were doubling him off of pick and rolls. They were doubling him, trying to get him to get rid of the ball. And I wasn't sure exactly if that was working particularly well, because a lot of times they turned him into a passer, and it was kind of when the Hornets were keeping it close in the second and third periods, and Graham ended up with 7 assists. Now, you want him to only have 11 points, and they did get him to shoot 3 of 12 and 3 of 9 from 3, so they, I guess, mission accomplished, and they ended up winning by 17 was the final number, though their biggest lead was 22. So I guess it was effective. Hard to say, because he did get the ball to guys who ended up scoring, but they did end up winning the game. So they kept him out of rhythm long enough to have that be effective. I just wonder, is that going to be something that we see a lot of when they play teams with one just real dynamic scorer, and just dare the other teams, the other players on the team to beat them. They also went into a zone for a little bit at the end of the game. And I'm curious to see how that zone is deployed, because we've seen teams struggle with the zone, especially the Philadelphia 76ers. And if the Celtics and the Sixers are destined to meet somewhere, getting that zone defense honed is going to be a big deal, because the Sixers struggle with the zone. And if they can kind of figure that out and be effective with it, then that kind of, I don't want to say negates the need for a big man, but that's going to be their counter. I think that's going to be where the Celtics try to mask their deficiencies against a team like Philly and start playing some zone. So to see them start to deploy that towards the end of the game, I just wonder if we're going to see that in situations where, like, they're up 20 and there's an opportunity to experiment in game against teams and see what they can do. Like, that's, I think that they might do that more. And again, in preparation for things they might see down the line. All right, that's going to be it for this Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to wish everybody a happy new year again, wherever you are celebrating 2020. Hope this new year and new decade is good for you. It's been 2019 was generally pretty good to me. And I've said this on another podcast, but, you know, my new career started in 2019, and 2019's been professionally very enjoyable. It's been hectic. It's been kind of wild, but I'm very appreciative of this opportunity, and I hope all of you get a chance to live some of your dreams and experience these types of opportunities for yourself. So really a happy and healthy new year to all of you. And as always, a sincere thank you to everyone for continuing to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast and making this part of your daily routine. I know I say that all the time, but I really do mean it, because I know that your day is, your time is valuable. And to take half an hour, whether you're in the car, in the gym, wherever you are, to take that half hour or so to listen to me, and whenever I have Chuck or Tom or somebody else on, to listen to us, I know that means a lot. You're making a conscious decision to download this show and to listen to it. And I am forever thankful for that. It's awesome. You rock. I am very happy that you are a Celtics fan and that you are supporting me and the team. So thank you. Another way you can do that is by giving that 5-star rating and good written review. I've told you all, I am now targeting that Lakers game at the end of the month. I want to be ranked higher than Locked On Lakers at that time. I want to have my Lakers friends show up at the media section and have me point to those rankings and be like, ha ha, gotcha. So anything you can do, a 5-star rating, a good written review, sharing the podcast, it all helps. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.